but glorious. Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hulkster, whatever they call you, I'm coming after you, you coward.
Hello and welcome to Broken But Glorious. I'm Chris Lapp and I'm delighted to be joined online by fantastic Matt Fox. How does the evening, Matt?
Good afternoon, Chris, and I'm great. I'm not sure if I'm broken, but I'll kind of be fantastic but not quite glorious.
Well, thanks for joining us this evening. Firstly, congratulations on your recent winning of the Champion of Wales title. So I believe you won it from a fellow friend of the show, Drill. So can you tell us about the build and the match itself?
Well, I've been on like the peripheries of Britannia Wrestling for quite a number of years now. I'd wrestled Drill up and down Wales and up and down the Northwest, and in Ellesmereport, which is kind of like an adopted hometown, he asked for an open challenge, and myself and four other guys, Ry Lloyd, Pyro and Dan Evans, we all came out at the same time, we all had the same idea.
Yeah.
And then Johnny Saints, who was the general manager for the evening, made it a fatal five-way elimination, and it's just really cool because I've known all four of the other guys for years, and I've wrestled them all individually.
Yeah.
So to have the five of us together, it was chaotic, and I think that just it was an advantage for me, the chaos.
Brilliant. It must have been amazing to wrestle him for the Johnny Saint. Was he doing a bit of scouting whilst being general manager?
Well, you can only assume someone with his experience in that position is always looking for new things, always looking for new people.
Mm.
We had some other NXT UK guys on the show that evening as well. We had Tyson Tebow taking on Henry Teague Rod.
Yeah, brilliant.
And we had Flash Morgan Webster taking on 100% Welsh beef, Dylan Roberts, who is the self-proclaimed king of Britannia. For the people of Ellesmereport, it must have been an amazing card to see, especially if you consider that the Championship of Wales match was on the cuff.
Wow. Yeah, Dylan Roberts is somebody I really want to see live. I haven't had a chance to see him yet. So.
Dylan is I know it's going to be a cheap pump for me to say, but Dylan is fantastic. He's been doing it a very long time. He knows what he's doing. So if you can see Dylan's the dude.
This is the Bevway, the Northern Bruiser Drill. You are listening to Broken But Glorious.
So can we take it straight back to the beginning? So how long have you been a wrestling fan?
I've been a wrestling fan since as long as the day is wide.
Yeah.
When I was very young, I used to watch WCW Thunder on Channel 5 with like all the POWs and the Biffs.
Yeah.
And then I was very lucky, I had two sets of grandparents with Sky, so when I'd see them, I'd watch either Raw or SmackDown highlights. That kind of bred into what we see now.
Yeah.
Myself.
So who was your favourite wrestler growing up?
As a very, very young child, my favourite wrestler was Billy Kidman.
Wow.
But then, as I became more of a WWF, WWE kind of person, it was people like Tajiri and Billy Gunn. I don't know why, but I do know about Tajiri.
Tajiri.
Where I'm from is very it's very Caucasian. There's not a lot of diversity, so I think Tajiri was the first person of Asian origin that I saw on TV.
Yeah, and he had a great story going into WWE where he came in as William Regal's assistant in the
That was really cool, but Tajiri was the first Asian person that I think I ever saw.
Wow.
And it's just really cool, because then this year I flew to Portugal to train with him, which was
brilliant.
A full circle for me kind of thing. So
what prompted you to don the tights and get in the ring?
When I was 18, I had a very close friend who was still very much into wrestling. A lot of people I speak to have times where they fall out and they don't watch it.
Yeah.
And I was very much of that kind of person. I was like, I'm past that. But when I was doing my A-levels and laptops became a bit more of a thing and YouTube got popular, there's a lot of free time on the internet not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So I kind of slipped into watching wrestling again, and my friend, he came to college in a wrestling shirt, and I knew just because I'd been watching it, was like, oh, that's that guy. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, you're a closet fan. And he wanted to train, and I was dragged along as like the friend kind of things. So I didn't really have a lot of interest at the start, but then out of the three people that I went with, up until recently, there's only me that's been carrying it on full stop with no breaks.
Oh, so, wow.
yeah, and that was maybe 8 or 9 years ago now, so.
I'd say, was there a wrestler you wanted to mould your style around when you started training?
I don't know. I'm quite a cacophony of things all rolled into one, but
yeah.
I remember when I started, there was the three of us. My friend who wore the shirt in college, Phil, he initially was like a big, scared, like Mick Foley, Kane, Manic, Mankind kind of a character. And then another friend we were close with, Tom, really into was like early 2000s indie, so like American Dragon,
yeah.
Teddy Hart. So he was quite a serious like wrestler. But then when I started listening and like watching things from like Chikara, so Mike Quackenbush and Colt Cabana, so I was kind of a jokey kind of a character.
Yeah.
But then as our training progressed and we got the other opportunities and stuff, all three of our characters completely switched. So Phil, who was the scary Mankind character, became a character based off Simon Dean called Jim Powers.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is kind of cool because Phil was a big dude. Phil was like 23, 24 stone. Tom, who was the serious wrestler, became J-Fab, who would come to the ring with a hobby horse and treat it as real, almost like an Al Snow kind of rip.
Yeah.
And then I became very deadly serious because people tend to know me for being very proficient with the chain wrestling and the technical side of things. I've done some training at the Snake Pit, so people associate me more with that.
Yeah.
So it always blows my mind, because when we all started, we were all three of us completely different things, and all three of us have switched into sort of completely opposite things.
As I say, you've mentioned, as you just mentioned, you trained at the legendary Snake Pit in Wigan, so it has a reputation for being tough. So what was the... Tell us a bit about the experience.
Well, as it is now, a gentleman called Roy Wood, who was one of the original trainees of Mr. Billy Riley,
yeah.
He owns the club now, which has the name The Snake Pit, but it's actually a new club.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the training breaks down is that they have catch-as-catch-as-can seminars once or twice a month, but within the week they train three times a week Olympic freestyle wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So Roy, who's still in his 70s and 80s, still shows up in like a suit and tie, will come for 20 minutes for an hour three times a week, and he will just pull people's arms off. But he's the most polite gentleman and has the most gentle way about him doing it, because for people that know Roy, as well as being quite a serious amateur wrestler, he's travelled around the world coaching people. He used to also put on all-in shows for Joy Promotions and run his own shows of professional wrestling, so Roy has quite a good mix.
Yeah.
For what I wanted to get into, you know, that was kind of like my hybrid of style almost. But it's just very humbling when a 70-year-old man who's about 5'8", 5'9", and about 10 stone can still pull you apart. And I've seen him pull apart like jacked guys,
wow.
Like 6'2" guys. And Roy is just he's great. He's the dude.
Now, to take us back to your first match, what do you remember about it in hindsight? Do you think it was any good? Or?
Well, because of where I train, the Runcorn Wrestling Academy,
yeah.
We film everything.
Yeah.
So if I ever think that I'm getting a bit too above ideas with my station, or if I'm getting too much of an ego, I can go back and watch my first match.
Yeah.
And I can humble myself quite quickly. Because they have two tiers of shows. There's a trainee youth show, and there's the full-blown, full-roster show, so I can remember both. My first trainee youth show,
yeah.
Which was a mixed tag, which I lost following a Tommy Hayden Fury kick.
Yeah.
which in itself was quite embarrassing, because it was when NXT was on for the first time, so I was doing like a really bad Percy Watson impersonation.
All right,
people remember on Percy Watson. So that was embarrassing. And then when I was on the main... You know, the full blow, and this is it. I only got put on because someone didn't show up, and I wrestled the babyface Pitbull.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Is
Yes.
I remember he gave me this really cool German. And I've got the photo still somewhere, and I'm just like in the middle going, "Yep, this was a great idea."
So how has the fantastic Matt Fox character evolved over the years? Sorry.
Well, it's been quite natural in how it's changed. I started off being relatively light-hearted and humorous in my approach. I tried to enjoy myself, but as I progressed and I won more, I was put in a rivalry with a guy, and people just got bored of seeing us wrestle.
Oh, right. Okay.
And that in turn, because I would always be victorious, that in turn led that animosity towards me. So as a character, my ego drove me to places that I hadn't necessarily been. And
yeah.
I went down quite a really angry, very serious wrestler-y kind of path. But what I found quite interesting is I'm really into Shakespeare. So when that metamorphosis happened, I was given a female manager, Stacey Rose.
Yeah.
And then in my own head, I thought of us being like a Lord and Lady Macbeth because I'm really into Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I imagined our characters.
Yeah.
But to the audience, we were like an evil Jack and Mary Duckworth of wrestling, I think. And it's just the stories and the humour would come from that gap between how we perceived ourselves and how we actually were, and that's where the fun would lie.
Yeah.
But then recently I ended up forming a gang, because every evil genius needs a gang.
Yeah.
And they kicked me out, and somehow, due to being there and being around for a long time in that promotion, the RWA,
yeah,
that has endeared me to people. And I suppose technically now I'm someone that they want to cheer, which is strange for me, especially in front of that crowd, because I had 6 years solid of being, you know, Dr. Doom or Lex Luthor, like, you know, the evil guy, for the point of a better term.
Yeah. So as a member of RWA, you've trained and worked with some absolute legends of the business. You've...
Oh, no, there's loads. When I first started, we didn't do any training seminars because my trainer, Andy Baker, he has learned from the very best. He went to America himself before Brits in America was very much a thing.
Mm-hmm.
He trained with people like Jim Cornette at OVW and Danny Davis and Lance Storm, back when OVW was still, you know, the affiliate feeder school.
Yeah.
But then, for whatever reason, be it fate wasn't right, they decided not to continue with him to WWE, and he set up RWA. So through Andy, we've trained with everybody from, we have Dave Taylor every year, we've had Dr. Tom Pritchard, who trained people like The Rock and Kurt Angle. Wow. I was actually in, I think it was one of Dr. Tom's last ever matches, which is,
yeah, I was going to ask about that. As I say, was the 8-man tag last year his last match? That's the last thing on his Wikipedia page, is your match against him.
It could very well be. I know at the time he was wanting to do something else, I think, with someone in the Rock and Roll Express, but I'm not sure if that materialised, so I think that could well be Doc's last bout, which is crazy. Especially because the way we run our weekend seminars are that it's two very long days, but after each training session we go and hang out with whoever we're with.
Mm-hmm.
And what was quite lucky for me and some of the guys in that match is that Tom's got a very sarcastic, dry sense of humour.
Yeah.
He likes to riff people, he likes people to keep riffing and keep talking and see how far they can take,
yeah,
what they need to take. Because essentially what we do is tell stories, so you need to be able to tell a story and believe your own stuff. So it was quite laid back, it was quite cool to share that with him when we seem to be almost on a similar wavelength, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So we mentioned in our messages over Twitter that you gave up your bed for Rip Rogers, so what was that about?
Rip's another crazy person.
Yeah.
When he first came over, Andy on the plane ride, or when he picked him up from the airport, I'd told him to be heavy on me, to ride me, to see how I'd react.
Yeah.
So for that first weekend with Rip, I was not allowed out of the ring. I was ripped to shreds if I ever did anything even the slightest bit wrong. He was very critical with how I looked.
Wow.
Because Rip wants the best for everybody. You know, if you go and train with Rip, Rip will push you for the purpose being that he wants the best for you. He wants to see if you want it. Because if not, you're essentially just wasting time.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I respect Rip's honesty, and I still do, because I know that I still have countless things to do. So I'm ever even at like half the level he expects me to be, or where he thinks I should be. But having people like Rip and Tom, like they both have my details now. If I ever need to have any advice or need to talk, or you know, I've got them there as well as my peers and Andy, my trainer over here. So he's got a huge support network which is fed in from, you know, where I started and where I still am, because I helped to take the youth class, like the. I don't want to say like the play class, but it's a case of it's for young people that want to maybe try it or not try it, just see how they feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I helped to teach that, and it's just so cool to have this cycle, to have this thing that I still support, which has supported me so well for so long.
Is there some guys you've seen in the first class and you go, they've got it straight away? Or?
I'm very, very lucky, because it tends to come in waves. Like with like school years, some kids will come together, some kids will not come together, some kids will stay, some kids won't. And the current crop of young people now that are just getting onto our main shows at Runcorn are some of the best athletes at their age that I have seen.
Wow.
But it's crazy. Like people like Kay Lynch and Harley Hudson and Harry McKenney, Tommy Murphy, Alfie Matty. I could list lots and lots of names, but they know how highly I think of them. But it's just a case of making sure they have the same support that I had to make sure that they develop in the best way they can do it. Because I know a lot of them now, they want to start to get outside bookings, which will be great for them because the world needs to see these amazing young people. Because a lot of them are just turning 16, 17, and they can just do so much. Like, some of them can, like, do an hours match on the fly,
wow.
So without any planning, with any opponents, and it's unreal. it's just so unreal.
This has been Alexis Falcon on Broken But Glorious with my fan, Chris. See you all soon.
So you also worked with Al Snow in 2014 when you entered British Boot Camp Season 2. You described it as disastrous. So, could you let us know how you got involved with the show and your experience on the show?
So they had open auditions. You could email in material. So I think me and every other guy with a pair of boots in the UK sent off stuff.
Yeah.
And what it was, I was away at the time, and it was the anniversary of my granddad's death. And as I said previously, my granddad was very instrumental in me liking wrestling and knowing what was going on. So it was kind of a weird time. And I could see some of my friends and my peers, like Kevin Lloyd, who used to be Sexy Kevin, still is Sexy Kev. He got his email, and Pitbull, he had his email, and Cyanide, and they got their email. And I was on holiday, I just didn't really think. And then my girlfriend at the time, she checked my emails and it was there. And it just felt like, wow, this is really weird. Like, kind of sign. So when it came to the day, the auditions were split to morning and afternoon auditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the afternoon, so I get there just after 12. And you're sat in a locker room and there's people there, like El Ligero, the late Chris Travis, Rampage Brown, Mark Andrews.
Wow.
And you know, it's people that have all gone on to do big and better things, or at least like their impact is still felt. And then there's me, and it's kind of like, oh, I don't know if I'm out of place or if, you know, it was something like that.
Yeah.
So as I was going to go in, Kev, who'd been in the morning audition, saw me and was like, look, they've already know who they're going to go with, so just do whatever. So I'm kind of like, oh, okay, this is now just an exercise in exposure to a degree. So I'm the last audition before Mark Andrews, who eventually went on to win it.
Yeah.
So I go in, and before we go in, we're told, well, I asked, you know, what do you want from me? Because obviously being a wrestler, you'd think that we know how to work. But they said, oh no, just go with however you think. So it's like, okay, kind of half inch dick, not inch dick. And being filmed for TV is, it's interesting because the camera physically has to be very much on your nose, but when people are talking to you behind you, you don't want to be rude, so you're trying to look over the camera, who is then altering because he wants to keep looking at you. And so you're constantly fighting with the camera, and you can't really hear because the room isn't mic'd. And because I'd come off half in character in an aggressive way, obviously because it's reality TV. Well, I say obviously, it's obvious now.
Yeah.
Because it's reality TV, they were a bit standoffish with me.
All right, okay.
And then I mentioned about the grandfather, and then someone must have like clicked the green light and was like, right, that's the avenue to go down. So they just asked more and more questions about it.
Oh.
And due to the pressure of the situation, I just got more and more emotional.
Oh. So I did try and watch it, but I kept cutting out about 5 minutes in. I was like, oh, no.
I've still not watched it.
No.
I've had certain people tell me that it was good, it was honest, it was raw, but I don't know. I don't know how it went down or what happened. It was great for my Twitter followers for that game.
Do you think if they did it the other way around, where you wrestled first and then did the promo second, you might have got further?
It would depend on the nature of the competition.
Yeah.
If they'd already decided the people that they wanted and it was just trying to fab spots with fillers, then that's fine. But I think that if they'd have spoke to some wrestlers of a high level or that have a lot of experience, we'd be comfortable with working, brother.
Yeah.
You know, we let people win and lose all the time. So it's an interesting one, I don't know. Because you don't know what they want. They might like a certain thing this week, they might dislike a certain thing the other week. It depends on who's agenting it or who's producing it. There's lots of variables. Obviously, I'd have liked to have wrestled because with that locker room, there's lots of guys that I've not wrestled that I would love to wrestle.
Yeah. From what I remember of it, it just seemed to be a vehicle to try and get Grado over with the American crowd. I can't say I've went back and watched it.
It worked with Grado, so more power to
it. The main storyline I remember is Grado, Al Snow hating Grado.
Yeah.
It led to a match at Bound for Glory or No Surrender or something. I can't remember. But
yeah, I remember they did a bit where someone couldn't lift Grado.
Yeah.
And that killed that slave.
Hello, it's me, Sammy, the Glitch, Ganon.
And I'm Crash, and together we are The Arcade.
You're listening to Broken But Glorious.
So you've recently been on tours of Portugal and Germany. How did the character get over in a non-English audience?
It was cool because both tours weren't necessarily long. It was just an experience for me.
Yeah.
At the back of 2017, I'd been doing it a while, and I just said to myself, right, I'd like to do something big. So in February of this year, WXW, they had a program which is like a week's like refining course for people that already wrestled.
Oh yeah.
And the way it was advertised was that you'd be trained by Walter, Tim Thatcher, and Christian Michael Jacoby. And I knew who Walter and Tim were, but in my naivety, I didn't know that Mr. Jacoby was the booker. So I signed on to the course late, so I couldn't stay at the accommodations. I had to get a hotel, which was 20 minutes walk from where they trained, where their office was. So, booked all that, get over there, and it turns out two other English guys from the Northwest had gone that I knew, so I was like, oh, okay, I'm not by myself. And I remember the first day we walked from my hotel in the snow and the rain in Essen, which is West Germany.
Yeah.
And you walk through, and there was just Tim stretching off, and Tim, if you don't know him, comes across as quite a serious character, very, you know, sullen, gonna break you. So we walked in like, oh dear, this is this is quite awkward. And then when we introduced ourselves, it turned out he's the most fun, goofy person ever.
Wow.
this is we can relax now. But the way it would work, you'd wrestle in the morning, so you'd have to get there for 9, meaning that we'd have to be up at 7:30, breakfast at 8 to walk there. You'd wrestle from 9 till 12, maybe 1-ish, have an half hour break, and then Jacoby, the WXW booker, it would almost be like a lecture in how to make yourself more useful to a promotion or how to make yourself more viable as a wrestler, as a product, and like his philosophy on that. And that in itself was very useful because it's not something that you really think a lot about. You just think, well, go to wrestling, I'll be a wrestler, job done.
Right. That's all. So what's the plan for the next couple of years? Do you want to break America, Japan, become a regular in like the likes of Progress or NXT UK or what's...
Well, never say never to anything. You know, as I said, I've got people that I know that have done lots of really cool things. I've had friends that have been to America. When I went to Portugal, the guy who I stayed with, Super Kid, these past few months, he did Portugal, Japan, and Canada. Canada all within a month.
Wow.
So, who knows, if people want to contact me and want to use me, then obviously I'll do whatever I can to make that happen, because that's what wrestlers do. I think it was Terry Funk or Dennis Stamp that said, wrestlers don't retire, they just stop getting booked. And that's very much the way it is. If you want someone somewhere as a fan, tell the booker.
Yeah.
And the wrestler will probably do everything and a bit more, plus bring the kitchen sink to try and maybe get on the show.
So where can people see you in the near future?
My last date for 2018 officially is RWA Christmas Cacker on the 15th of December.
Yeah.
And then on New Year's Day in the Pontins at Southport, I'll be representing WAW, which is the Knights. And then on January 26th of 2019, I'll be at Britannia Wrestling Promotions at Royally Rumbled.
Wow.
In Prestatyn.
Are you defending your title or don't know what match yet?
To be announced, but I think I should be defending my title because I learnt how to roll the R's in Prestatyn.
Right, so before we go, do you want to promote your social media?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at FoxMattFox, on Instagram at FoxMattFoxgram. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.co.uk/bookfoxmattfox. And if you want to book me, email me at bookfoxmattfox@outlook.co.uk. Because I'll do anything. I've done radio, I've done school visits, I've done international tours. I've even wrestled in Wales. I've not done Scotland, actually. I'd love to wrestle in Scotland. I'd love to wrestle Robbie Wishart in Scotland.
Wow. I really enjoy speaking to you. I'd love to have you on again in the future. So.
Well, you've got all the social media out there, and you've got the email, so you can put me again. That's the way it works, Chris. That's the way it works.